I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is a spirit inside everybody here tonight. Talking about the spirit of rock and roll, New Jersey. Do you feel it?
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll, and we're bringing the rock and roll again today. People, quarantine is here. Bassist PJ Farley from Trickster and from Fozzy. Luke Bryan, drummer Ken Slusher, and guitarist Joe McGinnis, one of the geniuses behind the Kiss fan favorite band, Classic 78, are here tonight to celebrate our new single and video, Love's a Deadly Weapon. From 1985's Asylum. We're almost at 100,000 views on YouTube, which is crazy, since Heart of Chrome and No have just passed 100,000 views, and they're 7 months old. But you're going to hear how we chose Love's a Deadly Weapon, some of the Easter eggs we included for all you diehard Kiss fans who love 80s era's Kiss as much as we do. We shot the video in my backyard. It's the first time we've all been together in person since we started this band during the COVID lockdown. I'd never met Joe McGinnis, PJ. I'd never met Joe or Kent. First time ever. You hear all those stories. Come meet Quarantine. Hang out with us. Hear how we got Kiss guitarist Bruce Kulick to play with us and appear on Heart of Chrome and in the video. Find out how much I practiced or didn't for the flaming hoop jump in Love's a Deadly Weapon. And discover when and how you might be able to see us play live. Quarantine is coming up. And so is a live Winnipeggers. The Idiot Olympics 2 is happening tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on my Facebook page and YouTube channel. It's live. Special guests, more ridiculous contests. You know what we did last time. How bad is it going to be this time? It was our highest rated show ever, I think. Come with us to laugh with us, laugh at us. Any way you want it, tomorrow night, Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on my Facebook Live and YouTube channel. It's the Winnipeggers Idiot Olympics 2. Don't you dare miss it. All right, it's time, people. Are you ready to rock? Quarantine starts now on Talk is Jericho. All right, so the band that's taken the world by storm, Quarantine. The one thing we haven't done yet is Talk is Jericho, and it's funny, I'm just going to jump right in with this, is Joe is kind of a good graphic artist in a certain amount of ways. So he put us on the cover of Metal Edge magazine, and I put that up on Instagram, and so many people thought it was real. It was the best.
So they'll get a real kick out of the latest one.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm getting to. But there was like, Metal Edge is still in existence, and this and another thing. So I just literally put up the Rolling Stone one. And the hilarious thing about it is some people think it's real, but some people think it don't. And here's the best part about it. So it's like, fantastic to see this. Quarantine's on the cover of the Rolling Stone. Congratulations, you guys have conquered the world of music. And then one guy goes, so it says on the cover, exclusive interview with Keith Richards, remembering Jim Morrison. That's the other story featured. Joe, you spelt exclusive wrong.
Oh, oh man.
And you spelt remembering wrong.
Oh my.
We almost had him. Yeah, it's exclusive, EXLUSIVE,
And remembering is REMEBERING.
God, how did I miss that?
I don't know. How did we miss it? All four of us saw it and approved it.
I looked at it several times and was really excited about it. Now I'm not.
But how long will it take, do you think, to get Mach gold records? Let's really go the extra mile.
Can't we call Steve Brown? Wasn't he doing that for a business or something at some point?
A business.
I'm on top of the number 25 Billboard chart thing. I'm waiting for my graphic design artist, a real one, to get it situated. So you guys will all have one.
Oh, that's great.
Chris, I started
making. Legitimate plaque.
Thanks. Yeah. Just make sure we spell all the words right on it.
Yeah, my last name will be spelled wrong, I guarantee it.
And pronounced wrong too, probably.
Promise you that.
But like I said, it's great to do Talk as Jericho with you guys. It's the one thing that we haven't done. And we just put out the Love's a Deadly Weapon video, which is crazy because it did 40,000 views in the first week, which is really strong. And I was thinking today, we now have 250,000 views on YouTube between our three songs.
Wow. Wow.
No, it's funny. I just went into YouTube and I just put Kiss in. Mm-hmm. I think it's Heart of Chrome is in the top 15 things that come up, our version of Heart of Chrome. You type in Kiss and then you scroll down and before you get to like 15, our video for Heart of Chrome is on there.
That's great.
That's insane, man.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. Like, it's so cool to see this type of reaction. And I can't say I'm surprised because Kiss fans are super hardcore, as we know. They're super loyal. And I think the fact that we have kind of created this niche and made a name for ourselves as this band who, like I say, we're like the worst super group ever. But it is some form of a super group. We all have our street cred and our Kiss street cred. But the fact that we picked this gimmick of doing 80s unmasked songs only and ones that aren't on video or ones that weren't released in singles, I think it's starting to get a name value because of that.
It's something we tied our hands behind our back with this.
How do you mean?
Well, some people are like, all right, well, what are you going to do? You can't do the singles from that era. You know, people, unless you know that era of Kiss, they're just like, all right, Tears Have Fallen, you know, and all the obvious ones. But we go deep. And
I was shocked at how many people knew the Easter eggs. I mean, the hoop and the stuff like that. I mean, that's from Heaven's on Fire. But the beginning, have to be die hard Kiss fans to get that. And most everybody on the comments got it and knew what it was from. So
you're talking about the beginning of the Love's a Deadly Weapon video, which features a lot of kind of inside jokes from the Kiss Exposed video from like 1987 or something like that. But here's the thing. A lot of people saw that don't know anything about the Exposed video and thought it was funny regardless.
True.
And that's the secret to doing it, right?
Very true. And then they'll go back and get exposed, hopefully.
Well, yeah. But I mean, it's almost like it reminds me of when Metallica, like in the early days when they didn't have enough material, they did all that Diamond Head stuff, you know, Am I Evil and you know, Blitzkrieg and all those types of tunes. I know Blitzkrieg's not Diamond Head, but people thought that they were original songs because they hadn't heard them. So there's also a big segment, I think, of people that listen to Quarantine that have never heard any of these songs and just thinks it's a killer rock and roll band.
Yeah, you read the comments. People are, they're in the dark. Probably some Kiss fans are even in the dark.
Yeah. Yeah, because this is an era of Kiss that's not really exposed, no pun intended. And there's so much material on those albums. Like, even when we revisit them, like, even if you're talking about Love's a Deadly Weapon, I never thought it was a great – let me rephrase that. It was never one of my favorites on Asylum. Same thing with No, No, No from Crazy Nights. But then when we started doing it and then started delving into it and dissecting it, which is what you have to do when you do a cover – like, holy shit, what a killer tune. And now it's like, I love this song. Like, how did I not see this before?
Right. We kind of polished the old dust off of it, I think.
Well, yeah, exactly. And obviously, Joe, both those songs are so guitar-centric. They're like showcases for the guitar player, both of them.
Yeah, they definitely put me to work. And, you know, whatever we do from here on out, is going to be a cakewalk for me.
We've done all the heavy lifting already, I think.
Yeah, right.
I could say the exact same thing. I've never played more double. I played more double bass in the past year than I have in 30.
That's what we're saying. There's not a lot of double bass parts, and that's my kind of night.
Not so much.
But that must be fun for you, Kent, though, because obviously none of us have been playing anyways. But even if we were, it's like for me, and then I'll let you answer, is that for Fozzy now, we're such a radio-centric band because we've had a lot of success in that. So there's a certain way you sing the songs, and our producer's very strict on what he wants, which is great. But to come and do, Heart of Chrome or Love's a Deadly Weapon, where you can just scream and just all these high parts, like it was kind of a real... to let off some steam in that end and kind of keep that side of my voice working. It must have been the same for you, like you mentioned, after not really being a rock drummer for 30 years.
Yeah,
per se.
Absolutely. It challenged me and made me go to different tools in the toolbox. I'm a perfectionist, as most musicians are that I know, and I wanted to do it justice. So I wanted to really, really nail the parts. I told you guys when we did the video, I did it and I have to cut the air off up here in the studio area. And okay. I was literally, it looked like I took a jump in the lake at your place. And it just absolutely was challenging. And it makes you really, really, really appreciate what Eric Carr brought to the table. And he was such a little dude and those huge drums and all this and that. And it's just, it really, really made me appreciate what he did and what he brought to the table as a player, because I was dying.
How about you, PJ? Because like I told you before, when I did the Kiss Cruise and I was watching Gene do the Alive set, that was the Alive in its entirety. And I always knew Gene was good, but he's really amped it up over the last decade or so. What a great bass player. And there's a lot of interesting parts on these songs as well. How is it for you learning those Gene parts for your style of playing?
Gene, yeah, it definitely is sorely underrated in my book, and I'll always fight for him. But really, these songs in this whole era that we're doing, it's the arrangements are really the task. It's the timing, the different parts, and it's really just the arrangement and plus a lot of these songs are fast, and that's a lot of picking, that's a lot of, that's a lot of work there, and Gene definitely didn't slack off there. But yeah, really, the songs as a whole were a lot to kind of bite off and digest. This song in particular was a little bit of a head scratcher. I don't think those guys could play that song right now if, they were paid. And that's saying something.
They never did play it.
Yeah.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Talked about this before, but let's kind of go into it from Joe and Kent's wavelength of how this whole project started.
So I think you and I were talking a little bit, Chris, and we kind of when we were shooting.
Yeah.
And the whole concept of getting together and doing this kind of started from Kent being off the road, and I had just gotten a Floyd Rose, ESP guitar. I was really dabbling in Kiss stuff. So I told Kent, I said, we're not doing anything. Why don't we throw together some Kiss tunes? And he's like, yeah, that's great. We kind of bounced that back and forth. And No kind of came out of that. And, we definitely didn't know at the time, it would end up number 25 on the Billboard charts, et cetera. But kind of a crazy how, life works that way, but thankfully you two hopped on board and did amazing work on the song.
What was the original plan for it, Kent? Just the two of you guys just hanging around, having some fun?
Yeah, I mean, he and I, you know, musically wanted to challenge ourselves musically. So, you know, we tossed that one out there. We're like, yeah, man, but I think between the two of us, we can pull this off. Meaning Joe can pull everything off except drums. And he can even play those too, probably. But anyway, so, you know, we all, you know, us three send Kiss trivia back and forth, or I was to you, just silly lyrics and stuff. So I sent this intro. I'd cut the drum track and, you know, that thing. And I said, name this song. And Chris goes, well, that's no. He, you know, 5 seconds later, it came back and he goes, what's your plan for this? I was like, well, Joe and I got this guitar player who's incredible. And I was like, we're going to put it on YouTube. Ha ha ha. He goes, y'all need a singer. Let me know. And I was like, hell yeah.
You're going to do it.
I was like, you're in. Here's the contract. It's being faxed over right now.
That was a tough contract too, man. Must have been one of them Luke Bryan contracts, but I signed it.
Yeah, that's right.
Text from numbers saying, yeah, congratulations. Or, hey guys, this is, or hey Joe, this is your new band. You know, here's your new band members. Say hello to everyone. I'm like, boy, this happened really quick.
Oh, that's what Kent did with the group text, Joe.
So what I find fun, not only musically are we compatible, but our sense of humor, you know, a lot of our dialogue that we have in our group chat, you know, we are cohesive as a personality, as far as personalities go, we're cohesive as well.
So what you really mean to say is we're twisted like for what we do, right?
Certifiably, yeah.
But, you know, and then I said, Chris, do you know a bass player? And he goes, I got the guy. Within 5 seconds, he goes, I got a guy. And he comes in, he reached out to PJ, and then I think within an hour we have a project and we haven't played a note together yet, you know. So we had big aspirations for this thing. So,
but what's so funny is because PJ and I are in another group text with Eric Martin and Steve Brown and Joey Quesada, but we had never played anything before, PJ, or I don't even really know, because you hadn't done the Kiss stuff with Joe yet, which we'll talk about. I think I just thought of you because of our personality, knowing how good of a player you are. But I think to me, the reason why I thought that Kent and Joe would think it's cool is that Trickster toured with Kiss.
That's the first thing I thought.
And I was like, well, this gives him the ultimate street cred to be in this band.
1,000%. I thought that was the coolest thing. So, so nostalgic for me. It's like, yes, let's make this work. So, and here we are.
Yeah, I was in all in from the get-go.
So what did you think when I asked you about it?
I was shocked by the song selection. you text me like, do you like 80s Kiss? That was it. Not like, hey, we're going to go like, no. I'm like, yeah, sure. And you basically just said, yeah, we're going to do two songs with Kent and Joe. We're going to do no and Heart of Chrome. I just went, wow. And I mean, no. That one really threw me for a loop, but I was excited when I heard Heart of Chrome. Obviously loving Revenge. You know, I was like, oh, hell yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
How did we come up with Heart of Chrome, Joe? I don't remember how that one was decided on.
Well, I want to say that Kent and I were discussing tunes, you know, even beforehand. And he's like, well, we definitely should do a Paul one, because I think if Chris is going to do this, you know, he'll definitely want to do something like this, like Heart of Chrome, or, you know, one of those.
Yeah, he's a huge Paul fan. Yeah, I said,
right.
Chris is a huge Paul guy.
But I think,
so we got to do that.
You know, I think that was kind of, you know, in the mix or in the discussion, at least. So, yeah, I don't remember the exact.
I think I might have suggested, because I remember thinking, like Kent just said.
You did.
And you said, too, like, yeah, I'm a huge Paul fan. And also, too, to sing a Gene song first was really strange. Because of course I love Gene, but in the '80s, especially, Paul was my guy. And I was thinking, wow, we're going to do no. Well, if that's the case, Mr. Lead Singer Disease, well, if I'm going to do that one, then you guys are going to have to do the one that I want to do, or I'm not doing this thing, whatever, yeah. Which of course is not what I meant, but I was like, well, what about Heart of Chrome? Cause like Kent just said, what a great Paul song to sing. And unlike no and Love's a Deadly Weapon, I knew it like the back of my hand. Like, those songs, I've been singing that one since it came out in 1992. So where I had to actually put a little work into Love and into Know, because I wasn't as familiar with the vocal nuances of it the Heart of Chrome. I mean, I think I had that session done in about 90 minutes because you just either you know it and it becomes part of your, you know, musical DNA, or you don't. And that was one of those ones that just fit right in.
Right.
That album is such a, I'm such a huge fan of that album. It would be not cool to not do a song off Revenge. I think that's some of their strongest work, in my opinion. And what's really cool about that record or about that song is that's where Eric Singer kind of came into the picture. And Eric's actually the one that said, hey, you got to get Bruce on this thing. So when it came down to the section, the bridge, you tell me lies about all that you feel, all that stuff, I was doing the parts here, or most of the parts, some of the parts, and then Chris did the other stuff. We all kind of, but anyway, I sent it to Eric. I was like, man, what do you think of this? He goes, man, he goes, that sounds awesome, but I'd throw one more part on there. There's actually a high part on this thing. I was like, okay, cool. So I sent it to Eric Singer. And I said, what do you think of this?
That's cool.
Yeah.
So hold on. So I never knew that. So Eric let you know that we missed, you're talking about the vocal part, which in the video, it's kind of, we did a Queen Bohemian Rhapsody thing. But you're saying that we had missed a harmony that Eric told you to try?
I think so. He said, man, you ought to put that higher part in. I did three or four of the parts, and Jericho did the rest, but or something. I can't even remember who did them all. But anyway, I remember sitting at the desk working on it, and I just soloed the vocals, and I printed up a mix, and I sent it to the Singer, and he goes, man, that sounds killer, but throw one more part on there.
I think that's cool.
A record like that or something like that. So Singer.
You should have had him do it.
The thought definitely crossed my mind. You know, I didn't want to overstep.
Then the contracts really come into play.
Exactly. I'm like, I don't know about it. I think we got this. But anyway, it was just, again, nostalgic for me knowing that I saw PJ, you know, on tour with them. And now we're sending all these parts back and forth. And I came across the video of PJ and I doing literally the bass and drums. I found this video on my phone. And just soloed the drums and the bass, and it's so killer. And I sent it to him, or I posted it again. I was like, man, that's just too cool, because you hear the parts and your bass parts, and it's just that's so cool. It came together really, really organically, this whole thing. So.
Well, it's another thing that Joe touched on, is that, like, and we've all been going through different stuff in this lockdown quarantine area, but, I mean, it's, you know, we're all musicians, and even for me, I've been still wrestling, but I've been in the same city for the last 10 months. And thank goodness we can go there. But like I was thinking, like, I can't wait to go back to Denver or Dallas or Detroit or Toronto or London or whatever. But the quarantine thing with a K, our band, kind of provided an extra outlet of creativity, but also, which is such an almost forgotten word from that year of 2020, it was fun. Like, it was fun to talk to you guys and shoot the shit on, you know, on texts and all that sort of stuff. It really was a really mentally helpful project, not just musically, but from, like I said, from a fun standpoint. Did you guys feel that as well?
You know, being in a band is fun no matter what. I mean, guys get together, guys and girls, whatever, doesn't matter. You get in a band and you start the group text and the ball busting starts and just the jokes, camaraderie, and that's the stuff that keeps you sane out on the road, and why, you know, it gives you that kind of internal safety net when you're on the road and you're away from your family and stuff. You have your road family, you have your band, because if you can get along with your band and stuff, it just makes it so much more fun. So forget about just the playing of the music and having fun yourself doing the tracks and doing a song that you love. Then making friends and, you know, having this whole other thing grow, you know, on the sideline of it is like, that's the other bonus. That's the half, it's half and half for me, you know,
the camaraderie, right?
Camaraderie. And it's the making and the playing and the music, it goes hand in hand. So when you have that, it's just like, you know, that's the full Monty right there.
All right, Kent. What has playing in this band quarantine been like for you during the entire pandemic?
Man, it is definitely, you can ask my wife for sure. I'm a road dog. That's what I love doing. And so it's 1,000% helped keep me sane. And I still, you know, it's ebb and flow. Sometimes I'm down, sometimes I'm up. And I just miss doing what we do, what's in our hearts to do, what's our passion. But this definitely gave me something to focus on, because I knew, you know, I wasn't going to be able to go out and play with Luke anytime soon, but just because of the, you know, the world, the way it is right now. So this came along and just kind of unfolded. And it was just, like I said, it gave me something to focus on. It gave me a new fellowship group to talk to, you know, and just another set of ears or another set of eyes to bounce things off. And, you know, Joe and I were pretty tight anyway. And Chris, I've known you for several years now. And then bringing PJ in, like I said, it just kind of organically, everybody just, like Joe said, you know, when we got to hang out in person for the first time in a year, everybody was joking, cracking up. It was just the only thing that was missing were the texts, you know. We were in person, and it was a blast. And, you know, so there's definitely chemistry, and you know, it's pretty cool, man. It gives me something else to focus on and enjoy. And you put Kiss and Friends and things like that together, it goes.
And just to say it again, and I think it's the same for PJ. PJ and I never met Joe, and I don't know, PJ, if you'd met Kent either. So we just met a couple of weeks ago when we filmed the Love's a Deadly Weapon video in my backyard. But speaking from personal experience, I had never met Joe McGinnis in my life. We had talked a lot, and obviously we'd worked together, and we had a top 25 Billboard hit and had never met Festive face-to-face, and PJ hadn't met Kent or Joe, so half the band. You know, and that to me, it's like, it's a cool kind of like, in this pandemic and lockdown, there was two ways to take it. One is to let it steamroll you over and wither up and die, or let's be creative and figure out a way to thrive as much as we can. And here we created this great project and this great band. And we said, there's no end to this. We can do this as much or as little as we want, but we never really have to stop it. And it never would have happened had there not been a coronavirus. So in that respect, it's one small, you know, plus of this whole thing. Now, Joe, I want to ask you this because, once again, we've talked about this a lot, but for people that haven't heard Quarantine, this is probably like the biggest band you've been in. And the fact that like PJ has a gold record, Kent plays stadiums, I've had some success. But for yourself, it must be pretty cool to know that, hey, you have a charting song.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm still kind of new to this. You guys have been nothing but kind and welcoming and making me feel like I'm one of you guys, because truthfully I've kind of done music but on a much smaller scale than all of you, and there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, I'm playing with big dogs now, so to speak, and it's pretty amazing. I had to within the first month or two, it really took me a while to kind of grasp the concept. I'm in a band with all these guys. And we have a song that's at this point, No has how many views? 100,000.
115,000, I think now.
Like you said, 250,000 total.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, at the time, I really had to kind of pinch myself and say, I mean, it's not, you know, on top of that, the world was in, you know, complete chaos once this virus hit. So you have so many thoughts going through your head, but then this happens and you're like, wow. How on earth do you get from one end of the spectrum, complete, you know, negativity, to having something so great kind of blossom out of it? And, you know, like I said, you guys are definitely a lifesaver over here as far as I'm concerned, because you've brought me, not only me, but my family loves watching this, and they love, seeing what comes of it. So, you know,
You know, I was going to say as well, there's so many intertwining, as Keith Richards says about him and Ron Wood playing the weaving. There's so many weaving of our storylines together. But going back to this, when we put this project together, as far as, like I said, if this was a Kiss convention, for example, PJ could go because he toured with Kiss. But Joe actually has the most street cred at the time from hardcore Kiss fans because of Classic 78, which is Joe's project where, let me see if I get this right, you guys write songs and play songs in the vein of Kiss from the 70s, but they're all original songs.
Sure. Yeah, that's ultimately how it works. You know, my buddy Tom and I, pretty much we'll put these songs together. Tom's a very huge part of that. You know, he's an excellent songwriter. I sometimes wonder if he is Ace Frehley's long lost he thinks a lot like those guys would in the 70s. So if you listen to some of the lyrics he writes, you could totally hear, you know, that stuff being on a 70s Kiss album or a demo. So that's pretty much the premise of what we do. And
yeah, so what I was going to say is when that came out, and we've mentioned this, that when I went to Paul Stanley's house to talk to him about the Revenge 25th anniversary, we were in his kind of living room, and he said when we were done, you got to listen to this classic 78. Have you heard it?
That's crazy.
So I listened to your band, Joe, in Paul Stanley's living room.
Wow.
And then later on, we end up in a band together. Like, that's pretty cool, right?
Easy to me. So was it a cassette or a CD or what? Or
I'm assuming it's probably the CD, or maybe it was on streaming or something. Because like I said, we were playing. So when you go to Gene's house, you guys have heard this and maybe you've seen it. Like, he's literally, it's the most coolest thing for guys like us. Every single piece of Kiss memorabilia he has. And I'm not kidding. Like, he'll even say, I found almost every piece of memorabilia. And if I don't have it here, I'm going to find it. To the point where he built another room upstairs for all the Kiss Hello Kitty merch. There's another 1,500 or something. So I'm talking, remember color forms, like those little things that were kids, those little. So he's got everything. Paul has nothing, literally. I've been to his house 3 or 4 times, and he's got a picture of Robert Johnson that he painted. And he's got kind of a man cave downstairs where I think there's a picture of Paul from like the Palladium in 1976 or something. And the one thing he has is a Kiss pinball machine, but it's an updated version. And so we played Kiss pinball, and I beat him at Kiss pinball. So listen, I know Paul and he's my friend, but I'm still fucking a huge Kiss fan. So I'm like you guys, like, I'm in Kiss Paul's house and I just beat him in pinball. So forgive me if I don't remember if we listened to it on cassette, 8-track album, whatever the hell it was. It just, he put it on. Right. So, you know, so there was that side. And then also, like, when I told, like, Charlie Benanti, he's a very close friend of mine, he was super excited that Joe was in the band as well. So you had that credibility from being, you know, in Classic 78 to be in our band.
Just to interject, you've been to Paul's house how many times?
Four times.
Okay, let us now know. When you hit his doorbell, what does it play?
Ding, 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 ding. The first time he answered the door, he said, Lifestyles, you were here last week. I said, no, it's Chris.
Gosh, it's crazy. I mean, you talk about the Kiss 78, classic Kiss stuff. Joe, I've known Joe for a while. It was a couple of years, and he goes, oh, yeah, man, we got this thing, you know, and here it is, man. Check it out. Go get these. And I literally, my wife and I and the kids were out running errands or something, and I literally put this on, and my jaw hit the floor. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
This sounds exactly like Kiss. I mean, his Paul Stanley, like, I think we've talked about this, is it's crazy how much it sounds like Paul. I literally had to stop the car and listen. Like, I pulled over and we pulled into a parking spot, and I just kept listening and fast forwarding and going to the next song, going, these guys are every song.
You think that they're like lost B-sides from Kiss, from Love Gun sessions or something?
It's incredible.
B-sides. When I first heard it, I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. Why are they not playing? Why are they not buying these songs?
That's what I was saying. Right. A lot of songs should have been.
This would be great if Kiss was actually playing these songs. It's amazing.
But Joe, this is just something you did independently, right? Like, it's on Spotify, but it's not like you guys have a record deal or anything like that.
Believe it or not, we've been scouted by some labels after the releases. But yeah, it's all independent. You know, my partner Tom, you know, he's a very, you know, he wants to do everything the right way as far as release. You know, that's why we didn't release Identity. Sounds stupid, you know, on the surface, but as a Kiss fan, that was a vital part to their success in the 70s, was that mystique. And that way he wanted to put stickers in the CDs. So he does everything. You know, Kiss. And pretty much we agree on these things. But he's always one step ahead of me with stuff like that. But as far as, you know, musically, I mean, the combo between two of us is pretty awesome, and I'm thankful. He's a great guy too. Great.
Yeah,
it was like Joe was in Gore or something. We weren't allowed to know who he was.
Well, yeah, when we first were going to do the Saturday Night special that we did together with Bruce Kulick, We were like, "What can we?" You were like, "I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say it from Classic 78." I'm like, "What are you talking about? This is your chance."
He's like the luchador. You're not allowed to see him without the mask.
Yeah. You know? We should have unveiled him like separately. You know, and he goes, the eyebrow like Gene with the head.
He pulls a thing down. There's his face.
Joe, we could have given you makeup and called you Turtle Boy.
That's right, Turtle Boy. Yeah, I went to the KISS convention in Manhattan, and Chris was there, and Bruce Kulick. But I wore this. I had a shirt made up of Classic 78, and no one knew I was in the band. But I told Tom, I said, "I'm going to Manhattan to this convention. I want to see what kind of reaction we get." So I wore the shirt, and I could not believe it. Literally every person said, "I love your shirt, man. That band's great, you know." And I wanted to be like, "It's me."
It's me. My booth will be over here in the corner.
Right.
Wouldn't that be great? They said, "Oh, that band, what a bunch of turds."
Yeah, but it's kind of fun.
They're rooting 78 KISS.
DJ, let's talk a little bit about some of your tour experiences with KISS, because at this point in time in like 1992, you're probably, are you 20 years old yet? 19, 20, 21?
19.
You're a Jersey guy, grew up with KISS, whatever it may be. First of all, how was that to even get the information that you're going to be going out with KISS in an arena tour?
I tell this story. I remember getting the call. We were out, Steve and I were out in LA, and we were mixing our second record, Trickster's second record here. And we had just gotten out there. It might have been the day we got out there or the day after. And we're in the hotel, and we get the call saying that we had been offered the tour, but we were waiting for confirmation. And we didn't know if we were going to get it, because there was also stipulation with the timeline, and we had a deadline to meet. And if the record wasn't done, we weren't going to go on tour. He wasn't going to pay for it. But we got the call that they accepted us. They green-lighted us. And Steve and I were just jumping around the room, high-fiving. And at that point, I mean, we had already done arena tours, played with, you know, Poison, Scorpions. And we'd done it all, hometown arenas, gold records, the whole nine. And this was like, we got the call and reacted as if we had never been on the road before, never played before. Just fucked us from, well, we really did get from high school.
Right.
First thing ever. And we was just like, it was amazing, you know, to get that call, even though we'd done so much leading up to that. That all went away once we got the call. We got the KISS tour, here are the dates, you know, hometown arena, the whole, yeah. You know, boom.
Did you do a hometown show on that tour?
Badlands Arena, yeah.
Wow, that must have been killer.
Jeez. Pennsylvania. We did the Spectrum, Nassau Coliseum.
I would expect those houses were pretty full. Like in New York area, KISS was probably drawing some decent numbers still.
It was good. It wasn't great. It was, I mean, definitely much better shows. But, I mean, it was good. But, you know, it's like New York, L.A., rock bands around 92, 93. It was
the grunge era.
It was a cold winter.
You know? And that blows my mind. I saw that tour in Kentucky, and they were like,
that was probably the worst show of that tour besides Arco Arena in Sacramento. Same thing. And at that point, I think Rupp Arena might have been the largest arena.
It's a big place.
And there was literally maybe 1,500 people there.
Yeah, wow.
It was, I couldn't even believe it.
I can't believe the show went on.
It was incredible.
So KISS wasn't going to cancel, though. They'll play it no matter what, right?
Oh, yeah.
Thank God.
They were not packing up and going home. They took a pay cut, too. I don't know if I should tell them about that.
With that being said, it was still probably my favorite non-makeup KISS show I'd ever seen. It was incredible. I mean, the set list, the stage, the whole thing. Plus, you know, it was you guys, Faster Pussycat, right?
Yeah.
And then KISS. And it was, you know, I was, you know, 92. So it was, I was blown away. Like I said, the set list and the whole nine yards. But again, Rupp Arena is a big place. Chris, you know Rupp pretty well.
Absolutely. Lexington, is it Lexington, right?
Yeah, it's a big basketball arena. Huge. And it's a tough market there.
weird tour to have. Play one night in a place of 1,500 people, and then we can go to the Palace of Auburn Hills, which is just about the same size, and be sold out.
Wow.
That's crazy. Crazy.
So Detroit and that Midwest area was still a bastion for KISS even at that point in time.
All the places that Alive 3, Indianapolis, I think it was Ohio, Dayton, Ohio, maybe?
Dayton or something, Cincinnati or Cleveland or something, yeah.
I think it was Dayton. It was Dayton, Indianapolis, Market Square Arena, and Palace. And, they were all tremendous. You know, and we had great shows, but we had a lot of shows that was just like, oh my God, what the hell?
What was the interaction that you had with the band? Did you like any good times with Gene and Paul, or how did it work with those guys?
Yeah, I mean, Gene, anyone who knows Gene has heard stories about Gene, he's a people person. He loves to talk and get in the mix with you, and, you know, Singer too. I mean, Singer was in our dressing room more than Kiss's dressing room. Come in and say, Eric Singer should be a drummer. every night.
He would say, Eric Singer should be your drummer every night? Oh. It's like, Gene, he's your drummer. You know that, right? Yeah.
Well, he wanted a cut.
there we go.
But yeah, I mean, not too much interaction with Paul, but, Gene and Eric and, you know, some Bruce. In passing and stuff, you know, Bruce is definitely, you know, a kind of to himself kind of guy, did his own thing. But, you know, Gene loved to hang out and, you know, be part of the mix.
Eat your cookies.
Yeah, eat your cookies. He would come out with us on off nights. We'd go out to the bar, or, you know, he'd go come shoot pool with us and hang.
Jeez. Oh,
can't imagine Gene Simmons shooting pool.
I was just thinking the same thing. All that jewelry on at that time.
He wasn't good at it. Tell you that.
He wasn't good?
Good.
I wanted to ask you, Kent, about something earlier that we spoke about when you mentioned singing the vocals for Heart of Chrome. Do you sing vocals live with Luke as well?
I don't with Luke. I don't.
Okay.
A lot of the it's just that, you know, it. I play pretty hard.
I got it. Heard you sing "Living on a Prayer" and "Paradise."
You know what? That is true. I would sing lead vocals on "Living on a Prayer," and if we did it, we didn't want to change the key. So if we're doing it, we're going to do it record key. So we did "Living on a Prayer" record key, and it was killing me. I do the whole, you know, I did the headset mic and the whole thing because I had to play it. So I was like, oh, great, Garth Brooks. Here come the Garth Brooks jokes, you know. But the reason I did it is because of bleed through, you know, with an actual microphone. So yeah, I did sing Joe, thank you. I forgot, but I did sing "Living on a Prayer." The last show of the tour, we had the drummer from Colson Wendell's band got up and played "Living on a Prayer," and I went out front with Luke.
Yeah, that's nice.
At Detroit Lions Stadium, so that's I was so nervous. I don't know how y'all do it, Chris. I don't know how you do it.
No, the stadium, that's the one, right?
I was scared to death.
You know, Kent,
I was scared to death.
You know, Kent's very soft-spoken and very polite, but when he sings, it's kind of amazing. I mean, to hear him play in front of, I think where I saw him, it was about 20,000 people, and there's Kent singing "Living on a Prayer," and it's blasting. It sounds great.
Thank you.
You have a killer voice.
It was high.
See, Kent's one of those Nashville guys, though. Every single guy that's a Nashville kind of studio, hired gun drummer can sing, can play, can set up the gear, can record, can produce. It's like one of those musos that probably should have been drowned at birth. He's so talented. Makes me sick.
Joe. That's Joe to me. That's you guys to me, PJ. Hey, PJ, your solo record's really good, man. Who played on this? Oh, I played everything.
Right.
Oh, that's great. That's cool. I play drums. I can barely do that. So I have guitars. I'm a good guitar holder. I'm not very good of a player. But no, they are. They're over there. I'm looking at them right now. So.
Let's talk about Bruce for a second, Bruce Kulick, who did play on the Heart of Chrome video, which was so, like, Bruce has been a friend of mine for years, but I was like, when you guys were like, we should ask Bruce, and I was kind of like, I think I might have even said to you, Kent, like, okay, yeah, you ask him. Like, how many requests does he get to play on KISS stuff? But you tell us that story. How did you get him involved? Because he did a great job.
Man, it was one of those passing singer goes, man, you ought to ask Bruce to do it. He'd probably do it. And I was like, man, I don't want to really bother him, you know. And
Yeah.
One of those things. And next thing I know, a couple of days later, I have a message from Bruce in my inbox. Hey, Ken, I'd love to reach out to you. You know Bruce. He's very business. You know,
yes.
And he's very, here's, you know, he's like, here's what, you know, here's what I need. Here's what I want to know. You know, very, very, very nice, very polite. And he wanted to be a part of it. Long story short, he was in. And again, I was like, what? Wait, whoa. My head was like, it's kind of spinning, you know. And now I've got to talk to Eric Singer and Bruce Kulick within a week of each other. And so, and then I think Joe got involved with Bruce. Didn't, because you've known Bruce before I had ever talked to him.
I never actually, I had met him at a KISS convention one time and we spoke. Oh. But other than that, I didn't know him.
There you go. See,
didn't you have to help him set up his rig or something like that, Joe? Or was that PJ that did that? I know somebody had to help him with the technical stuff.
I think PJ helped him and I helped him as well. You know, I sat on Bruce for probably about an hour. You know, listen, you know, my whole life, you know, people have been recording and I've just been sitting there playing the part. So he said, I'll gladly do this project with you guys, but you just have to be patient because I'm still learning this stuff, you know.
Yeah, he was busting my chops for not being able to help him. I'm like, man, I don't, you know, I just hit things for sticks.
Well, that's a good thing that we provided for Bruce. We got him in to basically make him get into GarageBand and then, you know, basically get into home recording for the first time.
And he nailed it. His tone is exactly.
Exactly the same.
Like the record. I was like, oh my God.
Did you have to show him GarageBand, PJ?
I gave him a little bit of tips. I'm like, look, I'm embarrassed, but I'm running an old version of GarageBand. I'm like, I'm kind of a dinosaur when it comes to it too. I said, but you know, here's what I know. And, you know, and probably call Joe again.
And then, go ahead, Kent.
I was going to say, and then luckily you came into picture who actually really knew Bruce and kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together and made everything work. And like Joe was saying, guys, be patient. I'll get you the part. And it was like 3 days later and we had all the parts.
Well, that's what I do. I'm the schmoozer, right? Like I don't know how to run anything. And thank goodness that my friend Ed lives in town. So I go to his house to record. He puts all the tracks together. But the one thing I can do, like you said, is schmooze. Once I found that Bruce was interested, it was like, Bruce, thank you so much for doing this. It's, you know, it's a homage to, because he was like, Chris Jericho loves my era of Kiss. It's always his era.
Very proud of that.
You know, and to have him involved was like, it was really cool. Like, there's two sides to the coin, no pun intended, of having Bruce in, because I wanted him to be involved, but I didn't want it to seem like this is some kind of a gimmick. And it's like, I liked having Bruce there, but I wanted the band to be built around us. So to have him involved was cool. But then when you say we want him on the video, I'm like, I can't ask him to do that too. Like, that's, you're really overstepping it. But here he is, set up his little recorder on his couch and play his stuff.
Nailed it. Yeah. Did I ask him that, Joe?
I think you did. I put all the heat on you, Kent. You ask him.
Yeah. I haven't talked to him since. That's what
you ask him.
No, I'm kidding. You know what? He was so gracious. And like you said, to bring a heavy hitter in like that, you know, who was actually in Kiss right out of the gate.
Yeah.
It's like, like you said, do we really want to go down that path of doing that? And then, you know, everything else kind of be what it is, you know? So him coming in right out of the gate and it worked, you know, and it, golly, that whole thing was, again, was a whirlwind. Huge. It was huge.
My point was like, why would he want to come and play a part that he's already played?
Right.
But he saw it as in like, and he's really smart. Like once, like we said earlier, this is bringing this whole era of Kiss that's kind of forgotten into the forefront to where people who have never heard these songs go, A, that's Kiss, and B, that's great.
Yeah.
Like, give me more of that.
Had he heard No, No, No before he said yes?
He did. I sent it to him because
he did.
You know, it's the classic story, and I'll tell it again. Like, I'm excited about this too, but you know, it's a carry a big stick and walk softly, or whatever the cliche is. I think that's a Gene Simmons B-side from The Vault. but like, I know Gene and I know Paul and I know the dynamic, but like, this is pretty cool that No, 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 this obscure song that's written by Gene, Bruce, and I think Eric has a co-write on that. So I sent it to Paul as well. But Paul was a little bit more like, I think the one quote that he gave me was the emoji, the puking emoji with the green puke coming out. Like, I don't
he loves it.
But Gene loved it, and Gene sent it to Bruce, and so they told me that, right? So I think once that came out, then I asked Bruce about Heart of Chrome. Now, let me just say this. When I sent Paul Heart of Chrome, because beforehand I said, we're going to sing Heart of Chrome. He said, if you can sing that song in the original key with the original melody, then you're doing something, you know, something special. And I was like, oh, it's going to be the original key, original melody. Like, if I'm going to tackle that same thing when I did the Wheel Blocks over the summer with Phil Demmel and Johnny from Avenged and Nita, like, you can't down-tune it, because Maiden fans are like Kiss fans. They're listening. If you're not good enough to do it, don't do it. So when Paul said that, I was like, okay. And then I sent it to him, and he's like, this is great. This is great stuff. Paul loved Heart of Chrome. Gene loved No, No, No. And that's the way it should be. Why would they like each other?
I am a true band. I hate his.
It's like, yeah. So, but I think, like we said, to have Bruce involved with that, and I just want to say something else too about how influential Charlie Benanti was in all of this, because when I told Charlie we were doing this, and he knew about Joe and Classic 78, because Charlie is a 70s Kiss fan to the end of time, could really care less about 80s, 90s, really. Like, there's certain guys that are like that, right?
Yeah.
So when I told Charlie, he had done his series of, I think he had done, I don't know, whatever the he did, 2112, and he was doing Mother Love Bone. But I said, who is editing your videos? Because, right? And he said this cat called Dima Levenchuk from Seattle. So Dima did both of our first two quarantine videos and did such a great job, because that was us just filming it on our iPhones.
Incredible.
Like, in the midst of the lockdown, right? Yeah. So then Charlie ends up doing some Kiss covers, and tell us how that came about. It was Mr. Speed, and I think is it All the Way?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
So Joe, tell us how you got involved in that, because then you brought PJ on board as well.
Right. So I want to say I've known Charlie for maybe 4 or 5 years. You know, he was kind of a very vocal in his love for Classic 78, and he was always, you know, promoting us where he could. And so he reached out to me years ago, and kind of basically we talked Classic 78 and 70s Kiss. And the first time I ever said, do you like any of the 80s Kiss? was there an 80s Kiss? You know, I believe there's no other era of the band, you know, which I respect. I definitely understand where he's coming from in some aspects, but you know, that's Charlie. But anyway, you know, obviously we all had extra time during this, and I actually told Charlie, I said, I know we talked about it before, but why don't we actually do it? We'll do a video, and we'll you know, kind of pick a song. And we were throwing around ideas, and I said, I think I have a bass player, you know, kind of the same thing that you did. And I asked PJ, and then John Five got on board, and you know, is
lightweights, kind of, you know, just really terrible players.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's kind of how it happened. It was, you know, just for fun, you know, and then we ended up doing the second one. And, but, you know, it's just to, you know, introduce PJ and those guys. It's cool because I've known Charlie, and Chris, you've known Charlie, and, you know, now the circle is kind of complete as far as, 6 degrees of separation, or whatever they call it.
I bought Charlie's coffee, his shirt for his company. I've never met Charlie. I'm a huge Charlie fan. I'm a huge Anthony.
That's cool.
Never met Charlie.
I invited him to your show when you were in Chicago.
Oh yeah, that's right. And they ended up not being able to come.
He was busy, but I was trying to hook you guys up.
PJ, did you have any interactions with Charlie at all, or John?
I had known Charlie for a good number of years. I mean, not very well, but I mean, we'd see each other a lot over the. I mean, from the late 80s on to, you know, to currently. And we have a lot of mutual friends too. So, I mean, there was definitely a connection there already. We have a rapport, so to speak. But, you know, we never worked together and didn't talk on it.
Well, see, that's a great kind of a you never want to use positive and coronavirus in the same sentence. But that's another one of the pluses of the corona lockdown, is that you had Anthrax and Trickster working together. You know,
the comment on the Mr. Speed video. Like, I don't think I'd ever live to see the day that I would see the Anthrax and the bass player and Trickster recording together.
Or how about this?
In masks too. You guys had like the toque with the mask on it or whatever it was.
I had the rubber mask on.
Yeah. So did you have to all order your own, or did Charlie send them all to you?
Nope. We're all at our own devices there.
John 5 had the original from 1978.
Yeah. Of course. He's like the kids' Halloween costume or something like that.
He's got the stuff. His collection is insane.
Yeah.
It's very insane. But then Kent, just once again to complete the circle, then Bruce calls you to play some drums on one of his songs.
Incredible. Yeah, before that, I mean, I got to play PJ. I was on.
Oh, you played on PJ's record too?
I did. I played on one song.
I was getting to that. We're all ancestral.
Yeah, this is crazy. Yeah, well, I'm from Kentucky, so it's. It's all good. It's all good. But anyway, I digress.
All right, Kent, how did you end up playing on Bruce Kulick's songs?
Bruce reached out, and him and his wife were doing the band with Michael Bolton,
Blackjack.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I had a brain lapse there. Blackjack. So the song that he had written, as far as I know, with Michael, or co-wrote, and he was wanting to recut that and to do kind of a play-along thing that him and his wife are going to do. You know how he puts up some of the videos of him and his wife singing?
Yes, yeah, singing,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, he asked me to play drums on it. And again, you know, 90, you know, I saw Bruce in 88. I think was the first time I saw Bruce, was on the Crazy Nights tour. And I don't take any of this for granted. It's just, it trips
me out.
The fact that I could shoot Bruce a text and, hey man, how you doing? And he actually responds, you know, it's like, likewise with all you guys, you know, it's crazy the way this whole thing happened. So yeah, I played on a Bruce song, PJ song, I played with Chris Jericho and by God, Joe McGinnis.
Kiss has a way of connecting people, you know, and that always has been. And Joe, you actually, I'm paraphrasing this, so if I'm wrong, please correct me, but you have some kind of an endorsement deal now that Bruce hooked up for you?
Yeah, so ESP guitars.
That's great.
Well, he saw me playing the LTD, ESP, and the No 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 video, and he's like, are you endorsed? I said, no, by No No No.
Hell no, no, no.
And no, full price. my people at ESP, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, okay, you know, I'll never hear anything. A couple days later, I got an email from Tony at ESP, and you know, I put together a little you know, press kit and a little bit of a video with that, and you guys helped me out with that, so thank you. But yeah, I put that out, and within a couple days he said, yeah, you're right, we want you. And that was, you know, the rest is history. So now you know, I play exclusively ESP guitars. I mean,
that's so badass, man. That's really cool.
But you know, it also speaks a lot to Bruce and how, you know, just what a great guy he is. He's just so, I don't know, he's just so kind and generous. And you know, they always say don't meet your idols or whatever, but man, he proves that whole theory. Yeah. Now he's just, yeah.
Paul called him a mensch in his book. I was like, what does a mensch mean? I mean, it's a Jewish word for like just a great dude, you know?
He's got a good soul. You can tell when you talk to him, or he's just soft-spoken, and he's got a passion for what he does. And I'm honored to fly the flag for this era of Kiss that he was in, because I wouldn't be here without it, you know?
So as we start to kind of wind down here, let's talk about our first big meeting, which is great. So you know, once again, every trip nowadays is a little bit of an adventure. You know, and the one thing that I have, and PJ as well, is that we've still been working and have been taking some trips and that sort of thing. But I believe for both Kent and Joe, coming to Tampa was maybe your first trip in a year, almost 10 months, whatever it was. Kent?
I had had a handful of trips. I have a buddy of mine, a producer buddy I work with in Fort Myers. I'd been to
right
now. I'd flown maybe twice. So I was, you know, doing the whole wipe the seat down, mask and double mask and goggles and the whole thing, you know. So anyway, so it worked out. Lo and behold, I was Super Bowl weekend. We had already planned the video shoot at your place, And then I get an email from Luke's camp saying, hey, we're going to do a thing for the Super Bowl.
That's crazy.
The day before I was going to fly in with you guys.
That's awesome.
So anyway, I just turned it into a trip, and I went to after I got done with the video, I rented a car the next day and went to Fort Myers and did some sessions with my buddy Julian. So it's just, again, the way the universe worked that whole trip out. I got to play with Luke, flew in with those guys, and was at your place doing the video, and then to Fort Myers and then back home. So
yeah. And that was your first gig with Luke in 10 months.
A long time. Yeah, we've Whatever. Done some filming for an award show type thing, but it was just kind of in and out.
Yeah.
So it was the first time I really got to talk to him in a while and talk to some of the camp in a while and just shoot the breeze and just, hey, how's life kind of thing? You know, it had been a while. And that's what's so cool about this. I digress real quick, but I mean, when we started this thing, it was in knee deep. We were up to our eyeballs in Corona. Like, this had just happened. So we were all, I mean, who knows what this is going to do. And so to come where we are now, and we got to fly to your place and do what we did and actually be in the same.
Same room. Yeah.
Been tested and all this and that, and so it was really cool to actually be in the same room with you guys. So
we missed Kent when we watched Animal Eyes.
That's right.
My ride,
his ride was trying to leave 2 hours before. I'm like, I just ordered a whole bunch of food. You're not going anywhere, Schlotsky, whatever his name was. You go back inside the house right now.
Rick,
you're on fire right now. You can't leave.
Man, I was so. And then you guys sent me the picture of you guys doing the intro, and I was like, man, mad.
But Joe, this was actually your first trip in a year, right?
We've been, grounded, here in New York where I live. And, it's just, I was a little bit apprehensive, not apprehensive, but a little bit nervous, not knowing what to expect with, how airlines are or how crazy things could get during a pandemic, So this was my first time getting on a plane in quite a while and, landing in Tampa the day after the Super Bowl when everyone's trying to get out. but overall, I focused on the destination and not as much as on the trip, because I knew that whatever we were going to do was going to be a blast, and it turned out great. And it was, funny, the first time, we drove into your driveway and headed up there, and first thing you said was, "You're a real boy." I'm like, "Yeah."
You're a real boy, Joe. You actually exist. And that's what I said to PJ the night before. He met with you and your wife and had a drink or wherever the hell you guys were. And I said, "Do you guys still like each other? Is the band still together, or have we broken up? Like when you meet face to face, is everyone really cool?" Or
yeah, it's cool because the trip offered some normalcy and a relief from all this. So, I mean, just the whole experience was great. However, PJ almost got knocked out of his chair at the
record. I heard about this.
But
what happened?
There was some altercation happening at the sports bar where we were having
the one time a meal. Go out.
And PJ had his back turned to this guy who was getting pretty fired.
He fired up.
I'm really talking excited. To Joe and his wife, and I'm like, I hear this yelling and screaming, and I don't know, I got kids, so I hear that in my head all the time. I know how to block it out. So I'm like, oh, but then it's getting closer. I'm going, what's going on? I'm like, oh my God, there's a guy standing at the table behind me yelling into the face of some other guy who's sitting down, like, rah, 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 rah. And I just said to Joe and his wife, Julie, I'm like, even if I was anywhere near that guy's size or in any physical shape to approach that guy, I couldn't match his intensity right now. So that's swinging. I hope there's somebody in here that could take care of that. I'm not going to try. I'm going to get up and go, all right, wait, hold on. What's up, dude? Like, you can't do that.
No, you would get up and say, I'm a pretty rough guy. And they would run.
I had no roughness that day. Traveling.
It's funny too, just to go back to when we were talking about how Joe, this is kind of his first exposure to this side of the coin. And when we were doing the video and his wife, who was amazing, and you're so cool. You're like, I have my wife with me. Do you mind if she comes to watch the shoot? Like, if not, she'll just stay at the hotel for 15 hours as we do this shoot. Have her come. So she was off watching and we were doing our big scene with talking with the roughage and which was PJ's idea, by the way, which is amazing. And I'm a pretty rough guy. She's like, Joe, stop laughing. Stop smiling. Stop looking at the camera.
Every time he'd look at you, Chris, or anybody else but the cereal bowl, he would laugh.
But we got it. I watch it back and it's perfect. And I was like, this is the perfect amount to give Joe. You've got one line and you look up and you say it and you look down.
We'll ease into it. I'm not,
I know it.
I'll accept one line.
That's why you had the line. That's exactly why you had it.
You saved
me. I'm going to need my script before the next video shoot. I need it ahead of time that way I can memorize it.
It's not like Jerry Seinfeld when he says a line on the show and he can't stop smirking.
It's just loud. Jimmy Fallon on Saturday Night Live laughing. Well, the funny thing is, PJ sent a text about doing an intro based on Exposed, and none of us responded to it, which I think hurt his feelings a bit.
I'm like, I don't even know these guys anymore.
We text so much, I never even noticed it. I didn't see it. It was a great idea. And then I was like, well, what if we kind of expanded a bit? And you're like, what do you mean? So I wrote up like the worst script ever, like in 3 minutes at a red light. Send it to you guys and said, this is what we're doing, like, you know, tonight or tomorrow.
But that's what it was. We started
it was
what you wrote. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. It was really fun to, like you said, just to be doing a video and, you know, just to be around the guys. And then Nathan Mowry, who's the director, great ideas. And like I said, all I thought of was let's make this kind of like, okay, what can we do? Let's make it like the Lick It Up video, All Hell's Break Loose, post-apocalyptic with the barrels of fire, and that's exactly what they did.
It was incredible.
It's great.
Honestly, it was all hands on deck too. We had guys,
and I had no idea that actually going to be a hoop of fire that you were going to jump through. I was like, man, I had so many regrets, like, because you were like, build it, Joe, you're good at. I'm like, well, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get a hoop of fire on a plane.
So I just throw everything on you. Joe can do it. He can build shit.
Right. Yeah, he's
like, Joe's going, how am I going to get me on a plane, let alone a hoop of fire?
Yeah. Right. I'm not even ready to go.
So PJ and I are at dinner, and the next thing I know, I'm like, PJ, man, I really wish we had that hoop of fire. That would have been so awesome. And he goes, he's probably doing dry runs with it right now. Are you kidding? I know, Chris.
And yeah.
I swear to God, it was like an hour later, that message comes up. And it shows the hoop of fire. And PJ texts me on just our single, you know, back and forth. PJ goes, what did I tell you?
Not only that, Chris also goes during the day, yeah, I'm also going to light my hands on fire.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
But
it's like, yeah, you know, like we're, you know,
like Paul's if I was a kid watching that video in 2021 and I knew nothing about Kiss and I saw that, I would be hooked. I would say that is awesome.
Just to, you know, I've said this before, but to say it on our show, like that's how I got into Kiss. So the first thing I ever saw, like I knew the makeup thing, whatever, but I had no idea they took their makeup off. And when I saw Heavens on Fire, I was like, who's that guy? Because it starts with his hands on fire. And then you watch them. It's still the best. They're just having the best time. And there's naked chicks and they're making out and tongues are out and showers. And at the end, then the guy jumps through the hoop of fire. And I was like, I love this guy. Who is that? That's Paul Stanley. That's Kiss. Like what?
Right.
So deep down inside, when we started, you know, doing this, somehow I was like, I have to jump through a hoop of fire. So Nathan is a fire guy. He works with the Cherry Bombs, who were in the first, in the Judas video and in the Painless video. So I said, Nathan, you got to find me a hoop of fire. And that's all I had to say. It took, dude, he had to borrow his brother's truck because his car was too small to hold the hoop of fire.
He had barrels, hoops of fire.
Everything. He's the one who came up with the idea of burning my hands. And it's like, and by the way, no safety measures.
I didn't see a fire extinguisher anywhere.
No. And I'm like, I don't mind jumping through the fire, but how am I going to land? And dude, I jumped because I know you got to be straight. And when I landed on a thing, it was like a thud right on my breadbasket. Just, whoo!
I know.
And the fact you did it.
Real live audio of that, and you landing on the mat.
It's like,
I still think we should have put that at the end of the video. Silence long and.
What'd you say, Joe?
That first jump, you nailed it first try.
Well, and I knew, so I said, make sure you get this because I don't know how I'm going to land. And if you want me to do it again, it won't be as good. Of course, they did want me to do it again. And then I bail a bit because I know I don't want to land on my stomach again. So we used the first one. We got exactly what we needed. And one last thing is that we filmed it on a Tuesday, knowing that our song was coming out on the Friday. And Nathan did it, man. I was skiing in Park City, putting together the last edits on the chairlift when you're going up with my hand, like gloves are off and I'm watching and I'm like,
that's incredible.
Just edit this out.
And you know, also too, while we're on here too, a lot of people, the sonic vision that Chris, you had, and we all kind of agreed to too, was kind of taking the old Kiss sound. If Kiss was to come out today, what would it sound like? So taking the industrial sound today and kind of putting that. So I want to give props to Kyle O'Dell.
Yes, Kyle O'Dell. Yep.
For mixing that, Chris, you've worked with him.
Yes.
On Fozzy stuff, right?
Yes.
But that guy is a monster.
I was fortunate last year to have three top 25 songs with three different bands. Nowhere to Run by Fozzy went to 10.
That's crazy.
Wheel Blocks went to 20, and No 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 was 25. All of those were mixed by Kyle O'Dell.
He's there you go.
Great, great mixer. And I said to him from the start, he's like, what do you want from this? And I said, like, do you want me to capture the original sound? I said, no, like, imagine this song came out in 2020 and wanted to be on the radio, because that's what we wanted. We wanted the song to be on the radio. So, and that's where we're laughing about PJ's Frank Bello bass tone.
Spot on.
The snare drum and the whole thing is just amazing. So
the drums are right here, you know, right in front.
Casey and Rick,
your buddy. Yeah. Oh yeah, Casey and Rick. All hands on deck. The wives and everybody. Your wife took some pictures.
Everyone doing the Casey from Queensryche. Casey Grillo lent us his drums. He also did a great drum head for it. So like you guys said, it was all hands on deck. And it worked out great, because the first week we did 40,000 views, and we'll hit 100,000 probably quicker than No 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 and Heart of Chrome did. So,
and we may even play live one day. Who knows?
Well, that's the thing. So I got two more things I want to talk. One is that since Love's a Deadly Weapon came out, we already have offers to play gigs, PJ.
Yeah, PJ.
Yeah, we're getting the calls already. Coming in.
Yeah, you guys are my son's birthday party.
Hey, we'll do it, man. I wrestled at a birthday party once. I got paid a hot dog and an orange juice, so you can't do worse than that. But I think that's one thing, like we were talking about maybe doing something on the Jericho cruise, and I love the fact that, once again, like we said earlier, we can do this as much as we want or as little as we want, but there's no reason to ever not do it. And I would like to play live, and I'd like to make it very special to, I don't know, I'm just, listen to me, delusions of great expectations. You've got great expectations. You know, we could do Kiss cruises, or we could do Kiss conventions, or we could do M3, or like those type of gigs.
Coffee houses.
Wherever.
Well, that's you on your acoustic, PJ, and I'll be in the back cheering you on.
Yeah,
no, 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 no.
So now that we know we want to do some more gigs and we want to do some more songs, we don't want to give anything away, but let's give two or three choices as the last questions of songs that we would like to do in the future as quarantine. Because like we keep saying, between Lick It Up, Animalize, Asylum, Crazy Nights, Hot in the Shade, Revenge, Carnival, there's literally probably 20 songs off the top of our heads that we could do, you know, and there's probably more than that.
Oh my gosh. I could go on and on, you know, you guys throw me any song and I'm down for it.
What choices would you start? What choices would you like to do, Kent, if you could?
Man, I tell you, so we're keeping it obscure. I've always dug Tough Love, I think, is always one of my favorites. I'm going to try to go through albums. Let's see. I'll pick a Gene song. I like Trial by Fire. I've always loved that melody. Let's see. I'll go back to a Paul song. Gosh, that wasn't a Bruce song I was getting ready to say, but I'll just throw one that's not a Bruce song. I've always had I've always dug I've Had Enough, Into the Fire.
Yeah.
That's just, that album is awesome too. But, you know, a Bruce song, I would say, you know, gosh, there's so many.
What do you think, Joe?
I'm a huge Who Wants to Be Lonely fan.
So but does that count though? Because they made a video for it though.
Yeah, but here's how I look at it. Like, an average person may not know that song. You know, it wasn't like Crazy Nights or Rock and Roll All Night or...
It was never a single, I'll tell you that.
But that's basically what I'm getting at. But, you know, I like Any Way You Slice It. I like, you know...
What a song title. I love it.
But,
Any Way You Slice It.
You know, anything off Crazy Nights, I'm just such a huge fan of anything Bruce did with them. You know, even stuff off Hot in the Shade, man. I mean,
great stuff there.
King of Hearts, holy cow.
Yeah, you talk about like a Million to One is right up there for me. I know Steve Brown covered it, but it was more of a, like, but that was never a single, which is ridiculous.
Should have been a single.
Under the Gun.
Oh, yep. Great.
Silver Spoon.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to do a version of My Way, but the rule is no keyboards allowed. So whatever keyboard part there is, Joe, you would have to make it heavy, right?
I can make it sound contemporary. And
like, that would be great with, instead of the keyboards of a guitar, but wow, 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 or whatever, you know?
I think that's a problem a lot of Kiss fans have with some of that stuff was the keyboards. It wasn't,
yeah.
They're great, you know, it's the production with a keyboard. If you take that out and we kind of revamp it, we could, you know,
we make do that
really banging and, you know, great.
Another one that I think is amazing is Master and Slave.
I love Carnival. I love that.
Yeah.
Because it's so different.
What do you think, PJ?
I've always loved Good Girl Gone Bad.
Oh, that was under contention for a single at one point.
That melody.
Great so song, awesome. Man.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites. Take It Off.
Oh, what a video that could be.
PJ, wow.
No, he's got
I'm Alive, maybe.
Oh. That's a good one too, yeah.
Well, you are trying to kill me.
I don't know if I could ever sing the lyric, my mind is getting dirty at around 11:30. Uh-huh. I might start laughing halfway through.
Well, I hop into the car, hit the local
Teddy Ball. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
A point being, there's so much great material. We could do this for years and years and years. And unfortunately, Joey Quesada is going to end up assassinating all of us. You son of a bitch. Loves a Deadly Weapon is great. I hate you.
What's that Adam Sandler movie? He gets a phone. He crosses his name off a list.
Yeah. Joey, you're all...
Chris, he's got a list of his own.
Yeah, the list of Quesada.
I'm more afraid of his list than yours.
Guys, great. Always great talking to you. And hanging out with you guys. And like I said, it was awesome to actually see you guys face to face and give real hugs and real, you know, kisses on the cheek and all that great stuff that we did. So the next step, besides the next quarantine song, it will be doing a gig, which I'm super excited about. We already came up with a set list the other night. And like, it's like being a 15-year-old kid again. Like, what's your dream Kiss non-makeup set list? Now we actually get to do it.
So good. It's exciting.
It's exciting. And once again, like you said, we can do this project for as long as we choose to. And I would like to continue doing it for as long as all of us are still on this planet. As long as all of us are still, I'm alive.
All right. Well, the good thing is the songs are already written. We just got to choose them, you know.
That's exactly
it. It's the perfect side project. We don't have to do anything except play this.
It doesn't have to be current. To rock.
Thank you, guys. Great talking to you.
Thank you,
see
man.
You guys.
See you, fellas.